the redistricting, the commission. And I'm from the Quad Cities. And first of all, I want to welcome all of you that are here. It really is important what you think, and this public hearing is to find out what you think about our redistricting plan. The whole purpose is that the Temporary Redistricting Advisory Commission, which is who we are, the law directs us to hold at least 3 public hearings throughout the state and to receive public input concerning the first proposed redistricting plan for Iowa. And then this commission will submit a report to the General Assembly, and we will do that on Monday. So what you think and what you say is very important, and we want to hear what you say as well. But before we go on, I'd like the commissioners to all introduce themselves to you so you know who you're talking to.
Okay. I'm Rose Brown. I'm from Council Bluffs, and I'm a planner for the city of Council Bluffs.
I'm Eric Turner. I live in Des Moines, and I'm a practicing attorney.
I'm Lance Emke from Sioux City, Iowa. I'm also an attorney.
My name is Matt Paul. I live here in Des Moines. I am not an attorney, nor do I play one on television. Thank you for coming.
That mic went down there. Sir,
this one?
Yeah, that mic.
Yeah, I think that. Oh.
And just to give you a little bit more of my background, I served in the Iowa Senate for 18 years, and then before that was a Scott County supervisor from, actually I live in Bettendorf. But here we are, have a different purpose, and I want to explain just a little bit about the redistricting plan. Before we do, I'd like to introduce the two legislative service agency people who are also with us. Would you all introduce yourself?
My name is Ed Cook, senior legal counsel with the Legislative Services Agency.
And I'm Gary Rudisill, senior computer systems analyst with the Legislative Services Agency.
Now, the Legislative Service Agency is fulfilling its duty of presenting the redistricting plan to the legislature, and it combines both the congressional plan as well as our state legislative plan. And this is plan one, as you all know, and this now is open for public comment, and that's what we are doing today. We are holding 4 public hearings this week, and we have been in Council Bluffs, Bettendorf, Cedar Rapids, and Des Moines. And this is our last public hearing right now. We want to compile all your comments, whatever they are, from all 4 of the hearings. We will compile them together and make a recommendation ourselves from what we have heard. And then we will give that to the legislature, as I mentioned, on Monday. And they will have 3 days to consider the plan, although they've already been considering it, as you all know. And then they will vote. And they will vote up or down. They will not make any amendments whatsoever. They will just vote yes or no. If they vote yes, that's the end of the process. If they vote no, then the Legislative Service Agency will have 35 days to come up with a second plan, and they will present that to the legislators, and then the legislators again will either vote yes or no with no amendments, which means no changes. And if they vote yes, then that's the end of that process again. If they vote no, the Legislative Service Bureau can again give them a third plan. And that plan could actually be amended or changed. But the changes must all be agreed by the legislators by a majority vote, not the majority party, by a vote of the majority. And then that plan can be accepted. If they can't agree on a plan, then it goes to the Supreme Court of Iowa. And I've told all the other public hearings that in my time in the legislature, I can assure you that legislators do not want it to go to the Supreme Court. So they will make a decision, yay or nay, on the plan. We have only had it go to the third plan once, and then the legislators didn't even change it. They just accepted it. We have, in my time, we accepted the first plan once, and the second time it was the second plan. So that's the process. So we will then go to, I'd like Ed Cook to say a few additional words about how they put it together.
Thank you, Chairperson Tinsman. My name is Ed Cook with the Legislative Services Agency, and I'm a senior legal counsel. And the Legislative Services Agency is a nonpartisan agency that basically provides legal and fiscal services for the legislature. And 9 years out of 10, that is my primary responsibility in drafting all the bills and amendments in certain areas that the legislature deals with. And every 10 years, the Legislative Services Agency has a very unique opportunity and responsibility pursuant to Iowa Code. And that is to develop and present to the legislature a plan of congressional and legislative redistricting for their consideration. And basically what we do is we compile it pursuant to the Iowa and U.S. constitutions as well as Iowa case law and Iowa code. So how did this all start? Essentially, the whole process of redistricting for this cycle began April 1st, 2010. And that's when you got the card from the Census Bureau and had to indicate how many people had resided in your particular location. Basically, that was census day. And that's when the United States Census Bureau determined the number of persons in the United States. At the end of last year, the Census Bureau had to report information to the Congress and the President concerning the total population of each state, and then to determine how many representatives of Congress each state would be apportioned. And so at the end of last year, we found out that Iowa is going to go from 5 members of Congress to 4. The other thing that we knew at that point was that the total population of the state was 3,046,355 as of April 1st, 2010. And that number is extremely important to how we do redistricting. But that wasn't enough for us to conduct redistricting. What the Census Bureau then does is provide information to each state by April 1st, down to very small units of geography concerning the population of how many people reside in your particular neighborhood, township, little block of land, down to very small units, and all that information is presented to the state, as well as a geographic file that indicates where they reside within the state of Iowa. And that information was presented to Iowa on February 10th, 2010, and that basically started the process for our agency to develop the first plan of redistricting. The first key criteria that we look at is population. And based on the resident population of the state, we knew that the target number, the ideal population, for the 4 congressional districts would be 761,589 persons. For Senate districts, 60,927 persons, and for House districts, 30,464 persons. Based on the U.S. Supreme Court as well as Iowa case law and the Iowa Code, for congressional districts, the ideal district size should be as close to that number as practicable. Essentially what the U.S. Supreme Court has said, get it as close to zero as you can. And the first proposed plan ranged from the largest to the smallest district by 76 persons. For Senate and House districts, the Iowa Code provides that no district should vary but from that ideal number by more than 1%. And so all 50 Senate districts do not vary by that 60,927 number by more than 609 people over or below that number. For House districts, it's no more than 304 people above or below that number. In addition to population, what we have to do is respect for political subdivisions. The Iowa Constitution provides for congressional redistricting, as you can probably tell by looking at it, that we do not split counties. And so no county shall be split in creating a congressional district, and no counties were split in creating the 4 congressional districts. Obviously, in combination with the population requirement, you only have 99 pieces of the puzzle that you have to combine in such a way in order to provide for congressional districts. For legislative districts, the goal is to try to keep the number of counties and cities split to a minimum. And if you have a larger community, or county to try to keep the number of times we split that county as few as possible. In addition, respecting political subdivisions, all districts shall be composed of convenient contiguous territory, and contiguity is defined as not allowing point contiguity. What that means is, if you could look on a county map, some counties only touch at a point. And you could not have a district that basically contained territory in those two counties if they only connected at a point. And so no congressional district has that, neither does any senator house district. In addition, another factor is that the district should be reasonably compact. Now, as we're going down the factors, obviously the most important is population. As we go down there, then it has to be consistent with those standards. But we're not going to ignore that. And basically what Iowa law provides, and what I've told other members, it's a little far away, you can probably get the flavor of it. If you look at the state of Iowa, and maybe if you take your glasses off, it looks like a big rectangle. And so what the Iowa code provides is that districts should be reasonably compact, they should be square, rectangular, and there's a couple of measurements that we use in order to determine the relative compactness of a particular district and redistricting plan. Finally, what does make Iowa fairly unique among the rest of the states is that we don't take into account. Because in developing congressional and legislative districts, we don't look at incumbent addresses, we don't look at party registration data, we don't look at election results. All we're looking at is population totals and trying to get them combined in such a way as to maximize all the various standards. Another requirement in Iowa law, which is that each legislative district should, as far as possible, be included within a congressional district. Now, of course, my math is decent enough to know that 50 divided by 4 is not an even number. And so we had to cross the congressional boundary for two Senate districts. And the two Senate districts that we had to cross, the one up here in North Central Iowa, District 26, there's a House district on one side of the boundary, and there's a House district on the other side of the boundary. The other one is in Polk County, Eastern Polk County, where that House district runs right up to the Polk County line, and there's also another House district in Jasper County. And those two together create a Senate district, and those are the two districts that cross the congressional boundary. Every other House and Senate district stays within the congressional boundary lines. And so at that point, then, we've basically, based on those standards, presented to the legislature a proposed plan. And the Iowa Code provides that we're supposed to provide additional information to the public, as well as the commission, in regards to the plan. And so on March 31st, we delivered a plan, included a map, the bill, which if you want to kind of read up on your streets in Des Moines or Cedar Rapids, you can certainly read the bill. It's 79 pages and a lot of descriptions of streets in house districts. And we also had a plan report describing the various standards used in conducting redistricting. You can find all that information plus more on the you go to the Iowa General Assembly website, www.legis.iowa.gov, and there's a link on the front page that says Iowa Redistricting. If you click on that link, you will again go to a page that has a variety of information about the first proposed plan. There are maps. There's a Google map. You can type in your address and find out what district that you reside in. There's also the bill, the plan report. There's individual district maps as well. You can go to the commission page, and I made a presentation to them on the day after the report was submitted. And there's a PowerPoint presentation that provides a little information in regards to the first proposed plan. But of course, once we submitted the plan to the commission and the legislature, our role primarily for plan number one is over, and now it's in the hands of the commission, who's meeting here tonight, and ultimately the legislature and the governor, who then will have to decide whether or not to accept the first proposed redistricting plan. And so at this point, I will turn it back to Chairperson Tinsman to conduct the public hearing.
Thank you very much, Ed. Just quickly to go over our procedure, the main thing we're doing here tonight is oral testimony. So you needed to sign up in the back, and I do have some sign-ups here, but Glenn, you might see I have about 9 people signed up. I see more than 9 people in chairs here. So maybe someone could pass around the the piece of paper to sign up. You do not have to speak, but we would like to just record that you were actually here. Those wishing to speak will be limited to 3 minutes, and if time remains after those who have signed up to speak have spoken, we'll take those that have not signed up to speak. You may speak, or those that want to say something else may speak again. As far as written testimony, our written testimony we were accepting until this evening at 7 o'clock. It was supposed to all be in our written testimony. And I don't know if we're still accepting it on the internet or on the website. Are we?
I think we had a cutoff of the beginning of this meeting.
So that is cut off as well. But you can also read other people's comments on that website. If you go to www.legis.iowa.gov. So without further ado, I think we will start with Jeremy Walters. You'd like to come up here, Jeremy, and tell us what you think.
Crap, grab that board. Be bigger board. Name's Jeremy Walters. Live on the southeast side of Des Moines. I reside at 1534 East Virginia Avenue. The reason why I'm here today is because I was looking at the redistricting on the districts on the maps that you have redone. I wasn't really too sure why you guys are here in Polk County alone, like this legislative districts and the Senate districts, you're shrinking them real down in size and opening up more seats in the legislative and the Senate districts. My senator right now is Dick Darden. Now, I won't have a senator because my new district, Senate district, will be 17, which that ties in with McCoy's and Dick Darden's. And I'm also in House Representative of McCarthy's district. Now, before you guys did this, I was in House District 67. Now I'll be in House District 33. Now, House District 67 went up to in Pleasant Hill and wrapped around Pleasant Hill there. Now I'm seeing that there's going to be another legislative district in Pleasant Hill that goes by Eastern Boulevard there, if you can see that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be House District 31. That would be, it's going to be a new House District, if you can see that. So that's going to be an open seat. And then I don't understand why House District 62, now it's going to be House District 34. Bruce Hunter's seat is going to be smaller. You know, we look at numbers of residents. Residency, I don't think this is going to be, you know, it used to go clear out to Fleur Drive. Now I see his district is smaller compared to House District 33. I don't understand. And then you look at 31. 31 is smaller than 33. Why is that? You know, and then I look at the congressional districts. You know, congressional districts, I understand that you guys had to calculate by numbers, but why couldn't we just do it simple? Divide it 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, instead of going, oh, we got to do these blocks. You see what I'm saying? It would just be so simpler. But when it comes down to House districts, I'm looking at we're adding more Senate districts in the Polk County area and more legislative districts. More people to run. I mean, that's great, but having open seats like that, I don't understand. And having smaller, you know, you buy numbers, and I'm looking at these maps here. I really understand. If you guys can show some light to this,
sure,
for me, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I think we might ask the Legislative Service Agency to answer that. But I believe the easy answer is Polk County and Des Moines, you have grown.
Yeah, we have. But what, on the southeast side of Des Moines, we have not really been growing.
Well,
you know, in
maybe.
Easter Lake area has been growing, but on the south, basically the southeast side, around the fairgrounds or over there by, you know, by the airport, we're not growing. You know, we're going to be losing them all soon. So.
Ed, would you like to say something?
Okay. Sure. I mean, I think what I would direct you to look at the plan report and look at the population statistics, because the primary criteria for developing districts is a population, and essentially the target number are 30,464. And so, House District, whatever districts that you're talking about, it can't go over that ideal number by more than 1%. And so if there's more population, basically we take what the Census Bureau gives us in regards to the total population of each individual precinct. We combine those, and so there are some areas where the districts are smaller because there's just more people there. And the whole thing is you've got basically 100 House districts that have to combine within 50 House districts, Senate districts. And so you're trying to create as many districts that fit within the corporate limits of Des Moines and not go outside that limits. And so you're trying to maximize all that by still staying within that 1% criteria. And that really is the key reason why a lot of the districts look the way they do, is because the population basically drives what the districts look like. And basically what that's reflecting is that particular size district has got the same number of people, essentially, as of April 1st, 2010, is every other House district in the state. And that's basically what we're trying to get. And so some are smaller and some are bigger.
Okay.
Mr. Walters, the other thing is, and I may have misunderstood what you were saying, but I thought I picked up that you thought there might be a different number of districts or an increased number of districts. The districts are the same number, and they just are going to adjust in their size based upon fluctuations of population and to attempt to achieve equality within each district in terms of the population.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like on the southeast side of Des Moines, we're picking up another legislative district. And then on the state Senate, we're picking up another Senate district that's going to be open seat. So we're picking up a legislative district and a Senate district that's going to be open for next year if this plan goes through.
Jeremy, one thing I think you should keep in mind is don't get hung up on the number of the district, 31 versus 33. You will have a representative. You will have a state senator that you can contact, that you obviously have the opportunity to vote for or against. The boundaries may have changed. There will still be 100 members of the Iowa House. There will still be 50 members of the Iowa Senate. How they are programmed together, these guys basically have to put a puzzle together with the boundary drawn. The state of Iowa doesn't change, but within it, those boundaries clearly do change. But I just want to make sure.
Right. You know, if it goes through, whenever it goes through, I will not have a senator in my district.
You will have a senator.
Like I said, Senate District 17 will be Durden and McCarthy.
I'm sorry. The senator and the state senator and state representative that you have now, until there's another election,
remain the same
to be your state senator and state representative.
Oh, okay.
When you have a new election, which is coming up here in a year and a half, then you will have someone possibly different.
Right. Okay. Thank you for your time.
So,
thank you.
So, Jeremy, would you approve the plan or disapprove the plan?
I would. If I looked into it further, I think we could probably do better improvements on redistricting.
Okay.
I think that's what I would really recommend, is let's look into it a little further and let's make some improvements.
Okay.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, could we hear from, is it Gary F? I can't read your writing, Gary. Is it Gary? And then I think your wife also, or?
I just signed in for both of them.
Okay, and both of you may speak too. Would you like to both speak?
No, I'll listen.
You don't always have to agree with him.
Good evening. My name is Gary Capps, and I reside at 701 North 8th in Oskaloosa. And I guess the first comment would be, in the interest of time, if I were to say whether I approve or disapprove of the plan, I would definitely approve it, because I think we get it done and move on to other things. Not so much of a comment, but I just wondered if I could get the clarification on a couple of three things.
Could you speak up just a little bit more, Gary?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Regarding the proposed 4th District, if I count it correctly, I believe it now comprises 39 counties. Iowa has 99 counties, so if my math is correct, that would leave the other legislative districts having approximately 20 counties apiece. I believe I understood, as you did your presentation, that there was a requirement for a 1% statistical variance. No, that's not true. Zero. Well, as close to zero as possible.
Yes.
Okay, and I guess that's why I'm curious, because I wonder if there is a consideration of compactness that would be better for the people in the 4th District, as opposed to having three smaller districts and one very large district for one person to represent. And the other comment would be on the House and Senate district, and that's just a matter of curiosity. I think the previous gentleman alluded to it. I wonder if you could comment on the numbering sequence, because just in glancing at that, that did look a little confusing. A district with a 60 or a 70 number series right next to a district with a 30 series, and for just the general population, that might be a little confusing. So if you just comment on those two things, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Ed,
truck and call.
Thank you very much.
Excellent questions. Regards to, you know, the size of the counties, obviously the key driver for a congressional and really for all districts is the one person, one vote requirement. And there's just a lot of smaller counties in that portion of the state. It's just difficult to combine them in such a way as to, you know, to not have a district that has a lot of counties in it. As far as numbering goes, really the key thing to keep in mind with numbering is that it makes a difference for Senate districts. For those of you who can kind of recall the election cycle, everybody from a Senate district that was from an odd number had an election in 2010. And basically those who were from an even number had an election in 2008. Well, as obviously what we're doing with redistricting, we're changing all the boundaries, and we're changing all of that. And so what we try to do, though, is because the Constitution says we should try to avoid having 50 Senate elections in 2012. We should try to number them in such a way so that we try to minimize the number of elections over 25, and so that in 2012 we would have an election from an even-numbered district. And we try to minimize the number of elections from odd-numbered districts that can happen. Let's explain a little how that works. So what happens when we get the districting plan done? The districts are all drawn. We don't have any numbers with them, or we just have random numbers all over. They're not particularly numbered. What we then do, basically what I do, is pull up on the map a layer on the screen which has a dot for an odd or even numbered senator. And basically what I do then is, if there is an odd numbered dot wholly contained within a district with nobody else, that district will be given an odd number. If there's an even numbered dot in a district and nobody else, that will be given an even number. Now we're gonna, now as you can probably are well aware from reading the paper, we paired a few senators. And so if there is in a district two even numbered senators, we'll give it an even number. If there's two odd numbers, we will give it an odd number. If there's an odd and an even, we'll give it an odd number. What we're trying to do is set up the possibility for the person who was elected from an odd numbered district to continue on and not have another election until 2014. And that only works, and there's a variety of steps that go through between now and next February, is there only one incumbent residing in an odd numbered district who was elected from an odd number. If there is, They can have a four-year term. Now, as far as the numbering goes, which is kind of a challenge, I try to make it so they're somewhat consecutive. But what tends to happen is that you end up with, in this case, an overabundance of odd numbers in the northwest corner and an overabundance of even numbers in the northeast corner. And so you try to do it so that you can kind of run your finger through it. And I think we ended up kind of with a up-down motion ending up in Dubuque as the last district. There's no requirement that they be consecutive, and really the numbering is not significant, but it's very significant for Senate elections. And so that's really the key thing, is looking at the Senate numbering. And one thing, if you're an even-numbered senator and you would like to, well, maybe I could, if I was in an odd-numbered district, I could get a six-year term. Well, you can't get 6 years. The maximum you get is 4 years. But that's kind of how the numbering works. It's kind of a complicated puzzle, and we try to get it so the numbering makes some sense, but you're going to see some skipping around, and obviously you can kind of look at the map and identify that. But the key is, for Senate districts, odd or even, because every member of the House runs every 2 years, and so they're going to have to run in 2012. But it's the Senate districts that we try to number in such a way that we deal with that.
I can give you a little example from experience. I was one of those senators that thought I had a four-year term, and redistricting came, and I got a different number, and I had to run after 2 years. So it is, it does have an impact. Now, we've come to the end of those that have signed up to speak. Is there, who else in the audience would just like to say a few words? We really are interested in what you believe about the, oh good, please come. Do we have your name?
I signed up, I came in a little late.
Okay, but you signed back there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, just tell us your name.
My name is Jonathan Boggy.
Oh, John.
And I live right off of Ingersoll, 40th Street. So I just had some questions, and I apologize if this is something covered in like the first 5 to 10 minutes before I showed up. But I was really
interested.
There are
no dumb questions.
I was wondering why is it a necessity that House districts fit within Senate districts? And that, like, why is I don't understand that added layer of complexity or added layer of requirement when shaping these things. I don't understand why you can't have completely independent maps for your Iowa Senate and your Iowa House.
Well, we actually, both the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate are based on population. It's not like the U.S. Senate where it's two, you know, senators, no matter what your population. And so the Constitution, I believe, of the U.S. demanded that we do one man, one vote, no matter what House or Senate. So our configuration is that two House seats make up one Senate district.
Yeah,
and
that's,
it is the
short
same
answer
population.
Is a Senate district is this House district plus that House district.
Okay.
And the next one is this House district plus that House district. And they have to touch.
Ed has.
Basically, the Iowa code requires that basically each representative district has to be wholly contained within a Senate district. And if you're redistricting buff, a lot of states have completely independent Senate and House districts. But in Iowa, each representative district has to fit within a Senate district, which means if we've got 50 and 100, they've got to be wholly contained within a Senate district.
I understand that it seems to make sense from a kind of like simplicity kind of standpoint, but I don't know if it adds an added like challenge when putting pieces together and you get added complexity. I'm wondering like maybe what are the pros and cons of having them together, or I guess what is the reason for forcing them together besides the fact that it's just in the Constitution?
I think that's a matter for the legislature to take up. At this point, we're operating under a statute that sets forth guidelines that dictate how this map is to look, and one of those guidelines is that the House districts have to fit within a Senate district.
Okay. Thank you.
But we would like to know, do you think this is a good plan or not a good plan?
Well, I haven't like taken the time to study, you know, the Senate and the representative or the Congress maps for Iowa. But I'm very proud of the system here in Iowa and its independence and nonpartisanship. And I think it's really, really sad that the whole nation doesn't operate under a system like ours. So I really support this, and I think it's best that the legislature approve the first go at it, because I trust that there's enough study and enough, you know, effort put into the first round that only delaying it is going to further politicize the map, and I'm against that. So that's all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That is something we've heard at every stop, I believe, that Iowa seemed very pleased with this system, that it has integrity and independence. It's been a strong message we've heard.
All right, we'd
one
like to
question.
Ask once again. Oh, good. Come, please. Come forward.
I just wondered what they could do different if this is disapproved. I mean, how would they shuffle it around?
And tell me what your name is, sir.
Worthen Grattan from Grinnell.
I think the answer is that we can't know. And the reason why is because if this map is rejected by the legislature, they would need to provide some guidance as to what factors that are in the code, not their political concerns, but the factors that pertain to the code requirements and the Constitution requirements that they concluded were not met in this map. And that would then become the focus pieces of how to come up with the next one. I will tell you generally that the trend is in prior years when they've had more than one map, the next map has to be even closer as far as state house, state senate, district deviations and population, and you tend to sacrifice compactness to get the population requirement tighter. That's just a trend. But the legislature would have to speak to what it is that's missing in this map if it's turned out.
We have to have a reason for...
Yes.
Thank you.
I guess I had another question about some of the smaller districts around cities where you have quite unusual boundary lines at a closer zoomed-in scale. And again, this might be something that I missed earlier, but was there a requirement or a preference to follow, you know, municipality boundaries?
Exactly. That's
yes.
What you're seeing.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that that's one of the points in the code, is that we want to keep cities together if we can. Mm-hmm. And we want to keep counties as together, or as many of them together, as is possible in the map. So those political boundaries are honored. And so the fellow from Oskaloosa, I thought he was going to say, how come it was all squiggly on the one side? That was because the city limits of Oskaloosa went into one district, and that's where the limits were.
How do other states do it?
Many of the other states have the legislators do it. And so they do take into consideration where people live, what their political parties are. You know, I live right on the border of Illinois, and that's exactly what they do. And so they never have Republicans running against Republicans, Democrats running against Democrats, because they see to it that the majority party sees that certain people are protected by the district that surrounds them. So it's done much more, even though this is a political process, it's done much more on a partisan process in many of the other states.
I think as a general proposition, the major point that's different from other states is that we are not allowed to look at all about party registration in any of the precincts. We are not allowed to look at all about the voting percentage participation and how they broke down.
in any voting cycle. We are not allowed to look at all at the address of the incumbent. Any of that political performance or voter performance data, it cannot be considered. It is where, it's simply a vote. This is the, I've been saying through all our sessions, these are the, what you're seeing here are the returns of a vote with your feet, all Iowans, and let's see where you landed, and then this is the return. This is where people ended up when the census tracts were taken and the census data was performed. But no one, we don't know how many Republicans there are or how many Democrats there are in any precinct. We don't know if that's a precinct that votes heavily one way or doesn't, just tends to not vote at all. Whereas in your other states, they are not prohibited from looking at that. And my thinking is that they do look at it because they're not prohibited.
I guess I would also like to know a little a kind of historical perspective on how our state arrived at this system. Was it spontaneous, and like what kind of circumstances may support other states from adopting our kind of
What happened is, you know, Iowa was 1846, and we went through a number of decennials where it was done in the usual process, and then we came up against the occasion some odd 40, 50 years ago when the map actually, the legislature was at loggerheads, could not decide, did not decide, and the Iowa Supreme Court had to draw the map. When the, and that was turned out to be about the time that the Baker versus Carr U.S. Supreme Court decision came down that said this, that in those days in Iowa, the Senate was generally divided by counties, along the thinking that the U.S. Senate is divided by states, and that the House was apportioned by population. Baker versus Carr said, in the states, you cannot do that. You must allow one person, one vote, to dominate all criteria for Senate seats and House seats. So that was a big change. That brought on the loggerhead, couldn't decide. The Iowa Supreme Court then drew the map, and they drew it absolutely on where the population was, and it tends to be a little more of a scattergram then, and nobody liked it. And so the legislature then got the energy and the political will to come up with a different system. And that was about 1975, 1972 in that range, and I think 1977 in that. And 1980 was the first time we went forward with the new plan, and it's been heralded across the nation ever since. That's
so
the history.
After the court made the decision for the map, then the legislature looked at themselves and be like, okay, we got to make this nonpartisan. And that was just the cultural or the populist.
They realized the fight was a fumble. They couldn't do that again.
And they didn't want the court to decide again.
I would like
even
to report.
The court still can decide. They're the way out one. If the legislature can't decide,
that's the default.
The court will decide. So that's why.
I would like the record to indicate that this was the first public hearing we have heard the word decennial and scattergram. just to be clear here. Commissioner Emke is a expert on that. He is, what was the term? He's a redistricting buff.
Well, who else would like to say something? We'd love to hear from you or to say something additionally. Anybody? Yes.
I had a question about some of the formulas that constitute compactness. For the districts, like I had read, I think somewhere that the formulas give a preference for L-shaped districts and doesn't necessarily promote square districts over L-shaped districts, that it's like a north-south distance versus a east-west difference, and I was just hoping to get some clarification on
that.
One of the big challenges for redistricting throughout the country when you have a compactness standard is what's the best way of doing it. And a lot of political scientists, statisticians have come up with a variety of formulas, none of which are perfect. In Iowa, basically, they've kind of landed on a couple. We're trying to get at the concept that the district should be square or rectangular. doesn't mean it's perfect, because you could have a length, width, compactness score for a district that may look a little odd. It may not be exactly a square. But then you also have the other measurement, which is a perimeter. So to the extent you have jagged lines, you're going to have a higher number. It's going to take longer to go around the boundary of that district. And so the combination of those two, with the general notion that they should probably look as square and rectangular as possible, is what drives our decision in regards to developing plans. Now, obviously, this, you don't ignore it completely, but we try to keep it into account, but we have to make it consistent with the main criteria of population and maintaining political subdivision boundaries. But that's kind of how Iowa has developed its compactness standard. And the advantage of having it stated in the code is that you don't then go allow for us to pick and choose a compactness standard that would get the result we want. This way, up front, everybody knows what the standard is, and everybody can basically utilize it in some fashion, kind of know what a compact district would look like. It's not up to us to decide which particular one works best this time. So basically, the legislature has decided, these are the ones you should use, keeping in mind that we're trying to keep them square and rectangular. So that's basically the idea.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the counties are all square, and a lot of, you know, natural parts of our landscape are rectilinear. I think that maybe preferencing a circular district over a square rectangular district gets more at the idea of compactness than, you know, having square sides. I mean, I just geometry-wise, a circle is the most compact shape, and so a rectangle can be terribly uncompact.
Essentially, you know, it's a legislative decision. I think it largely is driven by the general shape of the state when they came up with that particular measurement for dealing with compactness, because you've got basically 99 squares contained within a rectangle. And so obviously there's a variety of standards that one could use, and you're correct. I mean, some states kind of go with a circular model, but because of the nature of how Iowa looks, I think the legislature decided that you're going to create districts kind of within a big rectangle. It makes some sense to try to create squares. It worked perfectly well for a congressional district because there are a series of squares, essentially. There's a few rectangles in there. You've got Pottawatomie County, and Woodbury a little longer than others. And so basically, I think that was a legislative decision that it does tend to kind of match up with the general geography of the state. And so that, I think that's why they went with that.
So it is kind of a subjective criteria. There's no like arithmetic or, you know, formulaic.
Oh, there's an actual formula that's in the code. It basically spells it out with length, width. It basically says that the length and the width of a district should be as equal as possible. I can't exactly remember what that is. And perimeters, basically, you're calculating the distance. It's going to give you a number as to how takes you to traverse a district or all the districts in a plan. I believe with the congressional district plan, it was about 2,700 miles to go around all four districts. And so you could use that number and compare it to other redistricting plans. This has got 2,900, this has got 30,000. And so you can create some kind of ability to basically compare one plan to another. The same with length width. You can look at the back of the plan report, and if you can look at for all the districts, it will give you a length width score, it will give you a perimeter score for each district, and then it will give you a cumulative total. And so it basically is an arithmetic formula that we use in trying to determine what is a compact district.
Yeah, and that's why I was bringing up the L. It's like you can have a really stretched out L with the same, you know, very compact height to width ratio because each leg is approximately the same, and you're not looking at, you know, I mean, it kind of ignores that fact. I'm just thinking of geometrically, there's probably a lot better, more accurate, like, algorithms to provide a metric for compactness besides just a length, ratio of length over.
In the end.
It could be like a standard deviation of distance from a centroid of area or something. I'm an engineer, so that's kind of.
In the end, it has to cover the tri-state.
Yeah.
it gets hard to put a lot of L's in and still cover the whole state.
Centroid. Centroid, I'm writing that down.
Are you taking the ACT on Saturday?
I am, I'm prepping.
All right.
Hope I do better.
I'd like to do one more call for anyone who would like to express their opinion, whether they like the plan that's being proposed right now, or whether they don't like the plan. Don't all speak at once. Come on, we really want to hear from you. No more?
I'll say I appreciate the way it lays out.
All right.
It doesn't fit our county that great. Never did. We're this corner of every district in Washington County. Okay. Southwest and southeast.
Well, without any further comments, I think I just move that we adjourn. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And thank you all for coming. I appreciate it.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, they're right.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know a lot of my comments have nothing to do with it. Like, out of your hands.
Good job. It's yours, I think.
Yeah.
Very familiar.